I'm Paul D'Arienzo, and this is a special. We're going to let you talk. And my guest just walked in. We finally caught him. Eitan Edwards, welcome.
Hey, man. Thanks
glad
for having
to have
me
you
tonight.
Back on. And I know you were on by phone the last time, but got you in the studio, which is great.
Yeah, live, in person.
In person. Cool. So whenever Eitan's on, we talk about preparedness, of course, and what to do in this very, very dangerous world. And we were talking earlier about the Mueller report, and I guess the first thing that comes to people's minds is now that this stuff is hitting the fan.
Right.
And this is just really the beginning. Everything is preamble to now. How should we – the response to the Mueller report is less about it's true or not or how it's released or what we do next, but more about how we prepare to survive the coming apocalypse that's going to be caused in the part of history unfolds.
Right. You know, it's strange because last night I had a chance to kind of roam the streets at night, you know. And I saw some things that I haven't really seen in New York for quite some time. I saw you could say the beginnings of what you'd say is homeless encampments, people that are kind of setting a place for themselves on the streets, as opposed to the transitory kind of a homeless person who you know is just laying there for the night. Mm-hmm. But I'm beginning to see people constructing makeshift kind of shelters. And, and I was wondering, this is where we're headed. This is kind of like the sign, the sign before the storm strikes, right? And I don't think that people kind of recognize the fragility of our system, just how easy it is for it to crash, and also what they need to do in terms of their own responsibility to buffer themselves from the impact of some of the things that the Trump administration has been doing over the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're now at the precipice of a major paradigm shift in the country, and we have to begin to start to plan for an inevitable shift in our national standard. And I'm really concerned about that.
Right. So what that really means is that what do you think of shelter in place? This whole idea that happened, I first came into contact with it when the terrorist attack occurred at the Boston Marathon, where they had everybody in the city of Boston was ordered, or in at least a section of the city of Boston where this happened, was ordered to stay in their homes by the police, where their homes became their jail cells. You know, is that the way to go? If in an emergency, should we stay at home or should we go somewhere?
Well, it depends on the type of an emergency. It depends on what the emergency is. If we're talking about a standard type of a situation, which would be a hurricane or that kind of a thing, a weather related emergency, then for the most part, if you live in a structure that's relatively stable, you should stay in place. But if this was a nuclear emergency, for instance, it would be definitely you need the shelter in place,
right?
Because the fact is that going and leaving, a solid home, you'd basically expose yourself to radiation and all that. And we've got to be aware of that.
You mean like this?
Exactly. As you've got that Geiger counter there.
Here you go.
And wow, and you've got some ticks too.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Here it is. Do you know that every home? Oh yeah. This is the. Let me hold on here. Let's see. Go on. So, you said a radiological. I mean, is that a possibility? Do you take into account in your work? Now, you're an author of a book, Preparedness Now, and other books as well and other things. Mm-hmm. What is the purpose of your book? Why did you make a book called Preparedness Now?
Well, I made that book initially.
This is not music. This is not a recording.
That's hot. That's hot. We're talking about ionizing radiation that is actually producing the clicks in this Geiger counter that you have that you brought.
I brought
it's
my Geiger counter.
To see it. Yeah.
Yes, I don't think anybody should be without a Geiger counter.
No, at this point, if there was a radiological emergency, you would not really have the ability to know what.
Without one of these.
Without one of those. Yeah.
Right. This one's at 272 counts a minute right now.
That's
291. I got it going up. I can get this baby going. If I put
it closer.
Yeah, I put it real close. Yeah. Then I can get it up to about 700-800 counts a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really is scary. Well, maybe we'll do that a little later.
Later we'll
do this. But I should tell people where I got this radioactive source. Do you know that there's actually only one legal source of radiation that everyone is required to have in their home?
You mean the smoke detector?
Your smoke detector contains americium-241, a few microcuries, maybe a microcurie, and that is a byproduct, produced as a byproduct of plutonium production.
That's right.
It's part of the atom bomb. So everybody has a little bit of an atom bomb in their home by law. They're required to have it.
Yes, they do.
And what happened was the last guy, smoke detector I had died. It started beeping all the time. Battery wouldn't stay charged in it. So I said, to heck with that. I'll rip it apart and see what makes it tick. And here was the part that made it tick, which is the tiny bit of radiation. But boy, that tiny bit of radiation sure sends this baby going when you hold it real close,
just
right?
Just a little bit.
And I got to shield it and everything. If I take it out, it really goes crazy. And so that's alpha radiation, right? It could be more. Don't eat it.
Right.
It's all right. It's not going to damage you pretty much. If it hits your skin, it bounces off your skin. Alpha, beta, and gamma are the three major types of neutron radiation. Neutron is then you knew an atom bomb went off if you got neutron radiation zooming around everywhere. What do we do in that kind of situation?
Well,
Edwards.
Well, we shelter in place. I mean, generally speaking, if there was, like, let's say, a detonation of an atomic weapon, the atomic device, hopefully it would be, I mean, if it was an air burst, there's going to be a lot of more destruction structurally and all that. But if it was a ground burst, there's going to be a lot more fallout. And what would we get a ground burst from? It would come from some sort of a small nuclear device, a terroristic type of an event, something relatively small in terms of its yield, along the lines of like 15 to 20 kilotons, something similar to what we saw in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
And a kiloton is 1,000 tons of dynamite. And so if we had something like that happen in New York, then one of the things that you'd need to do is protect yourself. If you were outside of the immediate area where the blast occurred, you'd have to protect yourself from the fallout, which produces this ionizing radiation, the form of gamma rays and all that, that would do a lot of damage to your body, to your cells. So essentially, sheltering in place is the wisest thing to do because it allows for you to, and putting as much distance in between you and the fallout as possible, and that is sheltering in place like in the hallways, because then you have mass, more mass that you have in between you and I mean dense mass, not like boxes and wood and stuff like
dirt,
that.
Dirt, stone, concrete,
stuff that has
water
density.
Too. Water is good. Water is good. Is a good advantage.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're actually we have a studio line 212-209-2877. That's our number for folks who want to call in and ask questions. We have an expert on survival and in these kind of extreme situations. It seems to be what we're facing. I mean, we're looking at the super extreme of nuclear and of course radiological weapons of all sorts. I think the dirty bomb gets talked about a lot, but it's not really the most dangerous. The radiological weapon could be something as simple as a radiological source stolen from a hospital, left in a garbage can,
or in a radiation facility.
And you don't have to; you can just put it in a box next to the street, and people will walk by and not realize they're getting near fatal doses of radiation just walking down the street.
Well, it depends. You know, obviously, it depends on the type of a material that emits the ionizing radiation, like cobalt-60 is particularly.
And they're around. You find it. You know, I haven't showed you, but I got these maps. I went to the Freedom of Information Act, and I asked the National Nuclear Security Administration, which holds all the atom bombs, if they would provide me with maps they've done, flyovers they've done of New York City, and they do them quite regularly through the Aerial Measuring Service, which is one of their agencies, one of the arms of the National Nuclear Security Agency. And they actually have measured the background radiation for New York City on several occasions, including several weeks after they were very frightened about the attack on the Boston Marathon. And so they went, if you remember, right afterwards, it was the Super Bowl was here in New York City.
Right.
And so all the sports stadiums and all the ways to the sports stadium were all measured for background radiation. Mm-hmm. And I requested those from the Freedom of Information Act and received them. It took me 2 years to get them. Mm-hmm. I also got background radiation for Manhattan and for Staten Island.
Right.
And what they basically are, the purpose of them is so that first responders don't go to a hospital or to a place that has a legal, legitimate use, accidentally thinking that that was the right place to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's so they can separate and see where an unusual reading comes from.
Right. Well, that they're going to have to do that. I mean, again, one of the things that I think the listeners need to keep in mind is that if there was a radiological emergency in New York City, that for the by and large, for the most part, that unfortunately, for the most part, that the city is really unprepared to deal with this on a large scale type of an event. And to you as the citizen, you as a New Yorker, you would basically be the one to have to deal with this. You'd have to kind of make the deductions as to whether or not you were safe or not. And without a device like this, There's a company that makes smaller devices. It used to be called KI4U. That's more sophisticated type of a device that that you have to have some sort of knowledge of as how to operate it. But there is a small pocket Geiger counter-like device that's made by a company.
Oh, yeah, you can get them. And what do you think? What should folks have in their home?
In case of these emergencies we're talking about.
In terms of a radiological emergency, I mean, it would be nice if they did have a Geiger counter, if they knew how to use it. And if you don't know how to use it, you can also get the small pocket ones, like for the ones made by KI4U that make something that tweets it or it chirps.
The
larger amount of radiation that you find,
I got it. There you go. Boom, now
the
it's going.
Increases because you just laid it right up on top.
6,500, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 counts a minute.
9,000 counts a minute.
Now
okay.
I pull it a little bit farther away.
Boom.
And then it goes down.
Well, the point is that if people had one of these in the event of a nuclear emergency and the plume or the radioactive fallout were to pass over your area, then you'd kind of know if you were exposed to high levels.
Yeah.
Because you won't know, because the different mechanisms that deal with this, like the EPA has got a nuclear emergency response unit that they deal with it. But the fact is that you'd have to assume that everything is working, whereas terrestrial radio and the emergency alert system and having the
of which we're
radio,
part of.
Yes.
WBAI is part of it.
That's right.
Of course, we have to be.
Yes.
I mean, you hear those beeps every once in a while, usually in the middle of the night, but it could be at any time. But
one of the problems is with one of the news agencies is having secure locations to even broadcast from.
Now, this is a legitimate fear that we have of emergency. I mean, right, the tides are rising. They're already spending billions of dollars to build dams around the city out in the ocean. They want to block the waters from coming in. Lower Manhattan could wind up underwater. We've already had underwater.
we already are.
We have, of course, the possibility of terrorist attack, which we've just been discussing, could include radiological weapons, homemade stolen nuclear weapons that are taken. Or with Donald Trump making trouble with North Korea and China, there might actually be warfare. Maybe somebody will drop a bomb on us.
Maybe. We could see there's a lot of highly enriched uranium that's around. And if somebody gets hold of it, then they could fabricate a device that could do a lot of damage. So it's something that we have to consider. New York is a major target, and
that's a given. We know that for sure. We've already been a target, but we're also not just a target of bad humans, but we're bad people. But we're also a target for a natural disaster as well.
Right, right.
And I remember we even had an earthquake. I don't know if you remember about maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, that was
there was an earthquake.
Yeah, from Virginia. The epicenter was down in Virginia, and unfortunately, the plate that particular tectonic plate that the earth it originated, we're part of it. So we were basically getting the resonant energy. We were getting the energy from it, but it didn't originate here. But we have a number of different faults in New York City. One in 125th Street, it runs straight up 125th Street.
I knew that already.
You know, right? I know you know.
Malcolm X told me all about that fault. There's a fault on 125th Street. So
yeah,
it's going to shake the city to its vibrations, right?
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, we live in a city where a lot of the infrastructure was designed to last no more than 80 years and stretching it at 100. And now we're at a point where we're over 100 years. Our subways are old. Our gas grid is old. Our water grid is old. And if an earthquake were to occur, I mean, even something of a minimum magnitude, something upwards of maybe a magnitude 4 or 5, that would do significant damage to our grid. But if we were to get something over 5, like a 6, or maybe even more than a 6, it would produce a tremendous amount of destruction, because we have a lot of structures that don't even need earthquakes to knock them down. They can come down by their own. Bunches, every weird, something that collapses.
I proctor tests occasionally, and I was proctoring an exam in Queens, and when it started happening, the lady who was like checking me in, she said to me after it shook, and I was sitting there smiling, she goes, "I'm from Peru. If this was Peru, we would be out on the streets running right now."
Yeah, because
only Americans. Do Americans just sit there and let it run, let it shake?
Yeah, but you know. So the thing is, I don't think that New Yorkers and listeners, I don't think that they understand. You know, it's like it's hard to relay this or try to. I'm going to give you an example. In 2011, I traveled to Washington, D.C. to speak with Director Fugate and the director of FEMA and some other people from FEMA down there. And we had a conference of black emergency management people to get together, and we spoke about this, and even with Director Fugate, one of the things he said is, he said, you know, you're in media, and you need to get the message out there that we can't do what people think we can do. But as the population expands and the needs expand, that the base, the government, does not have the ability to cover every American. And I don't think that the listeners, I don't think that New Yorkers really understand just how bad it would be if a major catastrophe were to hit this city in terms of everything, in terms of medical services, in terms of getting food, in terms of getting clean water, in terms of dealing with our elderly, in terms of dealing with our children. None of these things, there are no stopgaps.
How about pets? People are worried about their pets. They're part of the family.
Well, that's another thing. Pets, no stopgaps. Mm-hmm. If we had an emergency that were to disrupt the delivery of food and emergency supplies, mm-hmm. or just supplies in general, then everything on the shelf flies. And the stuff that we had a power outage for a long period of time, we're going to lose all of the perishable items, the milk, the meat, and all that kinds of stuff.
Goes fast. As we know from blackouts, when we've had power outages that plunge the entire city and the region into for days at a time. Sandy was one where, in my neighborhood in Lower East Side, we had 7 straight days of no electricity.
Right.
Huge flooding, blocks and blocks of territory flooded. And, you know, it was sort of funny in a certain degree because the rest of the city was managed to get its lights back on, so you just had to go up north of 42nd Street if you needed to get something. But I think it was a wake-up call what could happen.
Yeah, and you know what else, too? We just had we're actually in the midst of a solar storm right now, right this weekend. And it basically hit this hemisphere, the northern hemisphere, and in Canada, and we can see some of it in certain states. And from the aurora borealis.
Oh, is that,
yeah,
the aurora is borealis is now visible? It should be visible? And yeah. Oh, it's visible. So if the sky is clear,
yes,
then look towards the north tonight. And if we're lucky, a very rare event, we might see in New York the aurora borealis, which I've seen in Wisconsin.
Okay, you've seen it in Wisconsin.
And it was hard to see there. Right. It's rare there, too.
But let me tell you, listeners, something. If that we could have a solar storm, and one of the things you may have heard about it in, let's say, in the right, because like Fox News,
right? This is
Fox
usually
News covers this kind of thing, right?
Yeah, go ahead, because I want to ask you about that.
Well, yeah, Fox News covers.
Well,
this.
The left wing, that the progressive radio, we haven't been covering it, and they've been taking it as their territory, and it's time for us to claim this as our territory. Preparedness.
Yes, it should be our territory because it makes more sense. The reason that they do it is because it kind of like riles up their base, so the base can go out and buy guns and ammo and all this kinds of stuff, right?
Right.
But in terms of us, we're the ones who should be doing this because we're the ones who go out and help people. We're the ones who deal with the homeless. We're the ones who deal with all of the issues. And one of the major problems that we have is this situation with the solar storms. Mm-hmm. Outside, you know, people talk about EMP, the electromagnetic pulse, and there was some crazy stuff going on the internet a couple months ago or several months ago about there was an EMP, and people talk about an EMP as if it's a thing that flies around and it can come and catch you. But in reality, what EMP is an electromagnetic pulse, and this can come from a nuclear device that's detonated, but it can also come from it cannot come from the sun in terms of a solar storm. It's called a coronal mass ejection. So we're in the midst of a solar storm now. Now, if there was one solar storm in 1859, it was huge. It was another one in 1986, but I'm going to go to this one called the Carrington event. And this was in 1859, where an astronomer, maybe his first name was Richard Carrington, he was observing the sun, and all of a sudden he saw a flash, didn't know what was happening. But what it was a huge coronal mass ejection, which in turn directed a tremendous blast of energy at the Earth. And in fact, it was so powerful that there were people that had, there were no really electrical devices outside of telegraph machines. But it actually set fire to telegraph machines and set fire to a few buildings. The energy was so powerful.
That must have shocked the people in those days who looked for spiritual answers to everything. They would have thought that what's gotten into the wires.
What's in the wires, right?
Yeah, right.
And then in Jamaica and in the Caribbean, the aurora borealis effect was so powerful that it looked like it was like mid-afternoon. It was so bright. That's how powerful this solar flare was. Now, if something like that were to happen now, which it very well could, we would lose the vast majority of all of our power transformers in the city. And we would lose the ability to generate power in most of the nation. And the problem with the large transformers that cities have is that they can't be repaired. They have to be replaced. And unfortunately, there are not a lot of these things on standby. They're not a lot sitting in a pile, like waiting to be replaced. So we would have American cities that would not have power for weeks, months, and possibly a year, and even more than that. And because of that, it would create a tremendous amount of problem that even NASA had to study. Could you conceive?
It's a national security problem.
It's a huge national security problem, enormous national security problem with ramifications that people cannot even begin to understand relative to our hospitals, our food supply,
and we're not prepared for it.
Not even remotely.
Okay, listen, our number is 212-209-2877. This is WBAI. I'm Paul DiRienzo, and you're listening to a special program, a special edition of Let Them Talk. My guest, Eitan Edwards, who's the author of Preparedness Now and many other works about how people in our communities can be prepared for emergencies, to not rely on the government because they are not necessarily going to be there. And I was talking to a friend, somebody I went to college with, who's now retired, but at one point was director of a major branch of the Red Cross. And he told me that they did evacuation practices where they literally moved the entire population of New York City to the region along Highway 80 to the east of Gary, Indiana, along the Lake Michigan shore.
Right.
And that they would put literally millions of Americans from New York area if evacuated in 10 cities in that area.
Yeah, and none of that's going to work.
You better be a Hoosier fan.
You'd better be a Hoosier fan, but you know it's not going to work. It's the kind of thing that you develop a hypothetical scenario because you have to develop a hypothetical scenario. But you don't look at the details and you don't look at the specifics as to how you would actually deploy something like that. And if you have an uninformed population, that is a population that has absolutely no idea about what to do, not even know where to even go to get the information. So that basically when the initial emergency begins, that people are kind of like scrambling to figure out what to do. They don't know what source to draw the information from. They don't know where to go. And so then they start doing things on their own. So you have a lot of chaos that ensues, right? So this is why it's imperative that we start looking at these situations, because the global situation as it is today, that is, we're like, again, on the precipice of a major catastrophe because we have an unprepared population.
Okay, so that's why we want to get your questions, because we're going to spend the next part of the program talking about how we should be preparing.
Right, right.
You know, we talked about the threats that we face from radiological through natural disasters through collapse of society, which we're living through right now with this president and with the Mueller report. Our number is 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. I'm Paul DiRienzo. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, WBAI.org on the web. And we're hoping that you, I would think that folks would have questions about this. You are particularly focused, I mean, the community on a whole, but you've worked in the African American community. And why do you think that the African American community in particular should be getting ready? Is that because of the great trust that you have in the government to step forward and to help African American and other peoples, who majority minority peoples who are living in this city now? Or do you think?
No, I don't have any trust.
They're going to let you folks, what is it, the lifeboat?
Yeah, the lifeboat. No, I don't have, you know, I think that any community at risk, whether it be, you know, the African-American community, Latino community, the Asian community in Chinatown and some of the different areas, all of the communities that are at risk and usually ignored when these catastrophes happen, we have to be extra careful about our status, because when these situations occur, there's certain problems and there's certain specific things that we need that we don't get. Like, for instance, in the African-American community, where we have a lot of people who have diabetes, we have a disproportionate amount of people who have diabetes, people who couldn't get insulin, people who couldn't get albuterol for asthma, people who have sickle cell anemia, all of these different special needs that these communities have. And so it's really important that the communities...
Have somebody right now, hopefully with a question. Welcome. You're on the air. Welcome to WBAI. Hello?
Hey, Paul. It's Paul here. Come in.
Who's this? I'm sorry. Hey. Couldn't hear you.
Yeah, it's Paul. Paul Gilman here.
Paul, hey, what's happening?
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Paul Gilman, welcome. All right, what's happening, Paul?
All right, the great show. I'd expect nothing less.
Hey, what's happening, bro? What's going on, man?
Yeah,
Well, you know, I'm in the Bronx, and a lot of the people in the Bronx, I mean, they're pretty much fatalistic. It's like, whatever happens, happens. I mean, a lot of people are oblivious to national politics and everything. It's kind of sad that this government does nothing to create any kind of mass movement where people get together and figure out what to do in case of emergencies.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like Cuba when they had the hurricane. I mean, they didn't have any casualties. They knew it was coming, and they evacuated everybody. It was pretty, from what I understand, it was pretty orderly and calm. And I don't know. I mean, do you think our society as it stands now is capable of that?
Yeah, that it won't turn into like everybody would is promote this idea that your own gun is going to protect yourself against your family, and that the whole, you know,
yeah, that's
also the American ethic. You know, such individual ethic as if you can alone. If you were alone in an emergency or just with you and your family and a pistol heading into the woods, what are your chances of survival compared to a group?
Yeah,
effort.
And also the people that think that guns are the key to the survival. It's not. It's like, no, it's really about having the knowledge as to what to do, and then having the tools and the things that you need. You need food. You need medicine. You need to know how to, you know, to navigate your way through situations. And a gun is a final last step resort for people who are aggressing against you. But a lot of times we place guns as a priority, and really it's the information and knowledge is the priority, and that's what we have to learn.
And we have another call. We're going to keep Paul on the line and take the next call. Yeah. Hi.
Yeah, well,
wait, hang on. We got another caller. You're on the line. Go ahead. Join us. Welcome.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Yes.
You're on. Go ahead.
Yes. Gary Noel has been talking about this for a while. The main thing is Indian Point.
Indian Point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we should have a catastrophe like you're speaking of, what would happen dealing with that? Because he said that there was a proposal for a circuit breaker to adjust the electricity in the case of a catastrophe like that. Mm-hmm. Because if it goes off, Indian Point would probably make us like Japan with another Chernobyl.
Right, oh, Fukushima. Yeah, yeah, very good, caller. Now, that's a good one right there. And I've been writing a lot about Indian Point. And just to say one thing that could happen, that almost did happen, is that, you know, a nuclear reactor, even if it's operating well, needs an outside source of power. If it loses, like it happened in Chernobyl, its outside source of power, then it doesn't it has to rely on the power made by the reactor. So if the reactor is going crazy and not producing power, mm-hmm. you don't have any emergency electricity. You need an outside generator.
Right.
That's not connected to the nuclear plant to run it. And they had a case where the electrical switching equipment was in a room, and that it was left about 6 inches off the floor on a ledge, and there was a drain in the middle, and the drain was clogged with old leaves.
Yes.
And the water rose within a couple of millimeters of actually short-circuiting the outside equipment before it was discovered. So billions of dollars of technology and safety equipment and engineers who do not want to see an accident. They work there every day in their own families, live in that community. They do run it as safely as they can, I believe. Still, you know, the McGuffin. What do they call it? The McGuffin factor. The
McGuffin factor. Yeah, you know, they don't wanna,
I call it the McGuffin factor.
They don't want to.
You can't stop it.
But you can't stop it. You know, a lot of engineers will try to pretend that the system is infallible, especially the engineers that work for Entergy. One in particular, well, he's not an engineer. It's a guy named Jim Steets who used to basically represent the company. And yes, if you don't have that external power source and you lose that, then you basically are creation that you're waiting for. It's just a countdown to a major catastrophe. And the problem with Indian Point is the fact that it is similar to the Fukushima Daiichi reactor. It's almost like the same kind of a reactor. So we could have the same situation 35 miles away from Midtown Manhattan in upstate New York.
Well, they got places for us out in Illinois, in Indiana we could stay.
But we wouldn't be able to evacuate that area.
How do we evacuate millions of people through the Holland Tunnel?
Yeah, or just even from the immediate periphery of the actual plant itself.
Right.
And getting hundreds of thousands of people in Westchester County.
In Buchanan.
In Buchanan, New York, yeah. out of that area.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Paul.
Paul.
Yeah,
oh, we have
I worked on this issue.
Yeah.
And the plan, at least about 10, 15 years ago, was have all the yellow school bus companies go in and drive people to go into the hot zone, pick people up, and drive them out.
Yeah, that sounds like it really would work.
Oh, really good. We have a new caller. Yeah, you're on the radio.
Yeah, I like to say Indian Point is built on the fault line, too.
Yes.
For earthquakes. And that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's very good. And I also wanted to mention they keep fuel in pools there in the water, and the required on-site storage of the fuel, which is to a certain extent safely stored, but it's also a target, and so a terrorist could, and as you can see, we've known from the responses I've gotten from Freedom of Information Act that they are worried about things like that happening.
Yeah, the spent fuel pools are a target as well. And then if we had a catastrophe, if we had a major catastrophe in Indian Point and trying to evacuate the entire city, contaminating tens of thousands of miles of upstate New York, it would change the country as we know it, because we'd have to leave New York, because we're still within what's called the peak injury area, or we're in this area and we'd have to leave. And so none of these situations has been worked out in terms of the government has ideas about what needs to be done, but none of it is really tenable. It's not anything that's going to work.
We got another call on the line. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome to WBAI.
Paul?
Yes.
Yeah, it is Paul.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, the other call. New call. Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing? I heard you talking about homelessness earlier. About a little after Thanksgiving of last year, I was walking by, I think it was Broadway and West 4th or East 4th Street, and I saw this black man, and he didn't look, homeless or anything, but he was constructing, and it was cold at night. He was constructing with cardboard, a shelter right by this bodega. And he was putting it up, everything like that. And I just looked at it, and I'm going as your guest said earlier, I'm saying this is slowly happening right before our eyes, these homeless encampments around New York City. And then we're talking about this fragile economy, which I don't know if you saw yesterday, the Dow was down over 400 points. Same time last year, the Dow was in trouble. And I keep hearing that everybody saying that by next year, during the presidential election, the bottom is supposed to fall out, and even New York will be jeopardized by this. We would really get hit by this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that, this thing that I
yeah, question. Put it in terms of a question, because we want to move on. We don't have a lot of time, but go ahead with the question.
Okay, so what do you think about this?
Yeah, and let me put it in terms of this, because we're talking about the last 10, 12 minutes of the show, so 15 minutes of the show. So tell me, Eitan, what should everybody in New York have at their disposal right now?
Well, everybody, and the one thing that you want to have is you want to have an emergency food and water supply in your home, because if anything hits it, you, for the most part, you need to stay put, because any kind of an emergency that you need to evacuate from, it would be the kind of emergency that would be so severe that it's a completely different kind of a situation. So having an emergency food and water supply is good. And also, people speak about the grab-and-go bags, but that's extremely important as well, because if you did have to evacuate, and generally speaking, you would need to evacuate and have in your grab-and-go bag the materials and supplies that would allow for you to survive outside of your home for at least a week. And that is, you have to have your toiletries. You're going to have to keep yourself clean. That's a really important thing. You're going to have important papers that you need so that you can identify yourself when you go to a certain place, your birth certificate, all these different things. You need to pack that, not even so much in your bag. And sometimes what I teach is my classes, I actually have people carry their really, really important papers on their person. And they'll have a pouch inside of their clothing where they can put that inside. Like, they're really important papers, they keep that on their person. And the stuff that they pack inside of their bag, the medicine, the food, the clothing, soap, stuff if you have a pet, stuff for your pet, emergency stuff, medicine, everything that you need to be outside of your home for at least 7 days. Because when you get to an emergency shelter, there are no supplies. There's no toothpaste sometimes. There's no soap.
We've seen what happened. Katrina especially. There was nothing. People were brought to a stadium. They were in that stadium, and they had nothing. They were begging outside.
Right.
Please help us.
Help us for some toothpaste, the toothbrush. Right. If you don't – I remember there was a place in New York called Riverton years ago, and there was an explosion, a very mysterious explosion on the roof. And they had to evacuate the people out of the building into into a school across the street. And the people didn't have toothbrushes. They didn't have toothpaste. They had nothing. And they just left their apartment, which was right up the street. So when you're talking about displacing yourself from moving from one area to another area to an emergency evacuation center, and you have absolutely nothing. So having the emergency food supply at home, having the emergency water, having a grab-and-go bag with all that you need to get out of the city and live outside of your home for a week. And also, there's a lot. There's even nuances. Like, you need to be able to make your bag so that people don't think you have a lot of stuff in your bag. You don't want to look like you have brand new stuff. You want to look like you're kind of like just struggling like everybody else, even if it's in like a cart with a plastic bag over the cart.
What about our fellow citizens? Should we be in fear of them in an emergency, or we should pull together, and how should we go about that? How do we form our new government?
Well,
you got to be afraid of the cops. They're the first one that'll take you out.
Well, they could, you know. I mean, the situation, the
well,
cops.
Well, that's what happened in Katrina.
Well, the cops, well, that wasn't the cops, too. That was also Blackwater. Blackwater was down there and did that. Blackwater was hired as a security force to go down, and they were shooting at a lot of the people that were going into the stores and securing food and
Eric
all that.
Prince is involved with
Eric
that.
Eric Prince
and
was
that's
involved.
And that's the brother of
Betsy DeVos.
Betsy DeVos, who's right. Our secretary, who's teaching our children this kind of,
exactly.
These kind
yeah.
of ethics.
It's called Academy now because they switched over the names a couple times. But, you know, it's the Blackwater was down. I had a conversation with somebody about that who had bragged about his son who was with Blackwater at the time and was shooting at the people that were going into the stores and getting food. Yeah. So this is something that we have to look at. Will your fellow citizen be a problem? There is much of a problem, as you see. There's going to be some people that are going to rise up to the occasion, and they're going to do great things, and then there are going to be some people that are going to do absolutely awful things, and you got to be prepared for one of them. The people that are rising up and helping you, you don't have to be prepared for that. You can be blessed with them. But the people that are coming for you, you've got to be prepared for it, because you've got to be able to thwart an attack, get away from it.
Sounds like a zombie movie.
It is a zombie movie, and you know, it's about a test. It reminds me, I've always looked at it like a Twilight Zone situation as to how far will you go to protect yourself. And in a city like New York, where you have so many of our fellow New Yorkers who are suffering, who don't have enough food to eat, who don't have the clothes, who don't have anything, and you, when you get into a situation where everything is taken away, that's when our humanity is going to be tested, and that's when we have to learn how to modulate our behavior in such a way that we recognize what's truly a threat and what's truly someone in need. I would suggest to give to someone that you know that is in need, to be a human being, to do what you can do, but to protect yourself by any means necessary when you're threatened in that
way.
Well,
won't we have Donald Trump personally throwing us packages of paper towels.
Paper towels.
No, but Donald Trump throwing them right at
oh,
us,
he'll
right?
Have,
like in Puerto Rico, right? We have somebody on the call. You got a question. Go ahead. Welcome
yes.
to the air. We don't have a lot of time.
I've been trying to reach Anton Edwards. I need to know his contact information. And if we want to go into the archives for this show, how do we go into the archives?
Oh, it's go to WBAI.org. There's a click. There's a link that says archives. And then you'll be able to see the show. It came on at 8 p.m., so 8 to 9
p.m. Yeah, but I have to punch in the name of the program. What do you call it?
We don't really have a name.
All right, so the name of the program, just to clarify, yeah. caller, it's going to be listed as the Katie Halper Show, which it isn't.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But that's where you'll find the archives.
Right.
For this poll program.
Right,
yes.
Right. And I'm going to get it up on my SoundCloud site, which is related to BAI. It's a BAI-related site called SoundCloud. It used to be Trump Watch, and now I put my special interviews like this on air, and that'll be available, easily searched. Also, my name is Paul DiRienzo, DeRienzo. I'm on Twitter. You can sign at P DiRienzo, at P DeRienzo on Twitter. And all the stuff is always, all my stuff is on Twitter. It gets
okay,
where the links and all that kind of stuff are there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, do you have
Anton?
Yes, do you have any questions?
No, I know about him, and I've been following him, but I lost contact with him.
Oh, I see.
So
I see.
What's his contact number now?
Okay, what you can do is you can hit me at this. I'm going to give you an email address, all right? Hit me directly.
Okay.
It would be npnreality@aol.com. npnreality@aol.com. Or
okay,
you could go
you.
aton7@readyforanything.org. Aton7, A-T-O-N, number 7, at readyforanything.org. And you can reach me at either one of those email address.
And what is your
thank
book?
You.
Your book.
The book is Preparedness Now. I have another one coming out called AfroPrep Now, and you can actually look at that at AfroPrepNow.com, and you can see that's a book that I wrote especially for the African American community, the entire African diaspora, African American, Afro Latino, Afro everyone, everybody who's a descendant, because it has it's specially created and crafted to serve our communities for the different situations that we're going to see happening.
Right. Very good. And okay, great. Thanks. You got 5 more minutes left. I don't know if we got anybody else who wants to call in. Paul, you got another word or two?
Yeah, my son, as you know, both of you know my son, he's special needs.
Right.
He's in a group home in Orange County. If something happens, like, how do I get to him to save him? Like, if something happens in Indian Point, I mean, I'm practically having to go through the hot zone to get up there.
You know, I think that the thing, Paul, is that you have to prepare a plan. You know, and I know they always say that if you want to make God laugh and stuff, mention the word plan. But you have to have an action plan for your son that you have in place, that you know exactly what you're going to have in place, and as much as he can get and as much you can give him. You know, one of the things that we do is we produce cards. And then you do like the small cards that you can put in your pocket. You laminate them. Give him the cards. And let him, if certain things happen, then he would be able to read that card and he would know exactly what he'd need to do, because you've basically pre-arranged everything. Mm-hmm. If this happens, this is where we're going to meet. If you can't meet me here, try the next spot. And he can do that. And you could definitely work this out with a number of different the small cards. And that's one of the ways that you can do it, because you got to have a plan and you have to make it well before you have the disaster. You can't try to make it while you're in it. It's no mystery.
All throughout history. Go ahead.
You know, these kids will all get abandoned.
I hope not. We have parents like you who are very concerned, who are not going to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right.
All throughout history, it's been no mystery. Life is unfair unless you prepare.
That's been good. Well, I like that.
I like that. Right? All right. So, okay, Gabe, last couple of minutes, last 3 minutes. Let's sum up for people. Oh, we scared the hell out of people. We said that they have to worry about the radioactive devices in their home. Actually, they don't have to worry about them, but because they're there and they play, you know, it's some aspects of radiation maybe are not dangerous, and they are always dangerous, but at the same time, this is a useful purpose.
Well, they would be in a maelstrom after an atomic device, because all of that stuff is going to be pulverized and released in the cloud, in the fallout cloud.
There you go.
So, I mean, I think
that... So maybe all the people saved by fire, smoke detectors would not equal the number of people who might be impacted in case this stuff got out there.
But I think that, you know, as Americans and as New Yorkers, we have to now prepare ourselves for, I'm really concerned about the coming Trumpocalypse, because the economic situation that's going to arise from what he did with the taxes and punching a hole in the taxes and messing with the economy and all the different things, that this is going to produce a number of different situations relative to our economic stability. We're going to see the homeless population explode. We're going to see all sorts of things reverberate throughout every single facet of our society. And you see that Geiger counter going off. That's a perfect... That corresponds with exactly what's going to happen. So let's all of us out there start to prepare for the coming Trumpocalypse that is absolutely on its way before 2020.
This is my outro music. We don't need any outro music. We're going out at 55, so we got a minute and a half. I just like to say that we only do the show once in a while, but it's an important show to do to get people to realize that they cannot depend on, you know, that the NYPD actually tried to get the city council to pass a law banning the private ownership of Geiger counters in New York City.
Yeah. That
they
and
did.
Food too, yeah.
That actually happened.
That's
and
right.
that the Geiger counters people are a big hobbyist group, and they got wind of it, and they went to the city council and told them not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the police department said, oh, we don't want anybody with their own ideas or contradicting our ideas of what's dangerous or what isn't in case of an emergency. But what you're saying is that you cannot depend on
authorities. Don't even think that the authorities exist. You're on your own. They say it in New Orleans, you're on your own. So you're on your own. Make sure you know you're on your own, and then do what you need to do for yourself. Do not think that the government is going to do anything for you. Just think for what you're going to do for yourself, to paraphrase in a way from John F. Kennedy, right? Ask not what the government is going to do for you. Ask what you're going to do for yourself when the
community and the people around us in our community together, right? Of course, because we talked about being, you have to individually be prepared, but at the same time, we've talked about reforming the new government that we're going to need to run our society after the Trumpocalypse takes down the past government.
Eitan, right? For
president.
Of the new society. There you go, Paul Gilman. Thanks for joining us. Eitan Edwards, I'm Paul DiRienzo. This has been Let Them Talk Special Edition. Come back next week for the Katie Halper Show. And I'll see you on the news on Tuesday at 6 p.m. So tune right in. Never change your dial from WBAI, especially in an emergency. I'm Paul DiRienzo. See you in a few days.